the guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the season of the MFC podcast. Today, myself, Jay and Buster are joined by Andy Patterson. Andy, welcome along, pal.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be back.
Well, it's good to be back. New website. Kind of new dawn for the podcast. We're looking forward to it. Jay, I think the same optimism is shared ahead of the new season. A lot of new faces in and around the club, both on and off the park. A few friendlies down. Mixed bag of results. But the feeling is one of optimism amongst the supporters.
Yeah, I think that obviously the season ended in such a high with the 6-1. Playoff victory against Rangers, which I'm sure we all still kind of dabble with the highlights every so often. I know I do. So I think the optimism from that is carried into the summer. Obviously, a big rebuilding job was required, and I think that the business we've done so far, I think you can't really fault it. I think most fans will have had an idea of what positions they wanted filled, who they wanted to, or, you know, a shopping list, if you like, for different positions. And I think, for me, bar a goalkeeper and a central midfielder, I think we've kind of done some good business. Of course, certain, a lot of the players, you're not going to really know how they bed into the team, how they settle until the season starts. But there's certainly no negatives so far, I would say. I think, you know, if we can get a goalkeeper and a central midfielder in, then I think we're looking good for the new season. And it just shows you, you know, of course, as much as we love European trips and things like that, it'll be interesting. I'm quite looking forward to seeing how we respond to, you know, a proper pre-season. You know, last season, our season seemed to, you know, the year seemed to just be negative straight from the off with the games against Stirling. So the fact that we don't have any, you know, European competitions that we can absolutely, you know, crash out of early doors means that we can get a proper pre-season, get the preparations in order. And yeah, I don't see any reason not to be quite optimistic about getting into the new season.
Buster, along with the new faces, two of the biggest deals perhaps have been extending the deal of Marvin Johnson and also re-signing Lionel Ainsworth, who was out of contract. Both massive players and on their day can be game changers. How important would you say that getting both wingers signed up for long-term futures has been?
Very, especially with the way we played, you know, in our last few games, our last few competitive games, at least anyway. Johnson, everybody seems to have taken to him, you know. He's quick, he's direct, he seems to be able to put in a good ball. He's had a wee bit of nick on injury recently by the sounds of it, so hopefully that's nothing too, you know, too serious. Ainsworth, you know, probably about December last year we were all slating him, but since Barakoff came in, he seems to be back on the ball, you know, doing what he does again. He's very direct, he's very pacey, loves a shot. You know, as we're aware, he's scored a few crackers in his time. So it's great to get guys like them back in. Again, Lou Lang as well came in. We know what he can do. I think everybody sort of looks forward to seeing how he progresses. Those guys come in that we don't know much about, like Moulton, Fletcher up front. Even Clarkson, I would say, to be fair, is a bit of an unknown to me at least anyway, because he seemed to come in at Dundee and was on fire for about 10 games and then had a pretty poor last few months. So it'll be interesting to see how he, you know, how he managed to play with ourselves. And as Jay says, you know, I think we all know that we're looking for a goalkeeper and a midfielder. So if we can pick up, you know, somebody in, maybe a young boy in midfield to come in as a bit of backup, push Pearson and Lasley, and a goalkeeper, you know, to challenge for number one, I think we'll be doing okay. That and the possibility that Scott McDonald's maybe coming back, I still don't really see it myself, but, you know, you never know.
Kind of started to answer the next question there, Buster. In terms of Scott McDonald, it was one that we didn't expect to happen following the playoffs. It now seems like he's been training with us last week. He does have offers elsewhere, but given he's got a fair bit of an affinity with the club and ended last season in such a high, would you say there's an increased chance from that conversation we had in May that he will stay on at Fir Park?
I'd hate to, you know, curse it by saying I think he will, or even I think he won't, but, you know, it's kind of looking a bit likely, although we're known for giving ex-players somewhere to train over the summer. You know, I believe McFadden's there as well, but I'm very hopeful that McDonald does want to stay here. Whether or not, you know, I get the feeling he's waiting on a decent money offer from England, because he's 31. He's got maybe one last decent contract in him before he then has to maybe take a step down. But, you know, as you says, it's one of those things. I don't know if how long he's gonna drag it out. You know, Ian Barakoff has put a bit of pressure on him by saying we need a decision. I'm thinking we'll maybe hear something tomorrow about whether or not he's coming, you know, coming on to sign. But I don't know, to be honest with you, it's a difficult one.
Andy, I believe that you were at the friendly yesterday, a 2-0 victory over Livingston. Was there a few indications of the way that Ian Barraclough will set the team out over the course of the coming season?
Yeah, well, missed the first 10 minutes, but saw the rest of the game and it kind of improved as the kind of game went on. First half, I wasn't overly impressed. Obviously, you have to take it in the context that it is. It's a pre-season friendly. You know, the sole kind of our ultimate point of these is to get the guys ready and raring to go for the opening league game. First half, we kind of a wee bit more kind of possession based game than what we'd kind of played in the latter half of last season. Second half was a wee bit more direct, and by doing that kind of brought Ainsworth into things a good bit more. And you know, as he kind of demonstrated, he scored the first goal and had a part to play in the second. We generally looked a lot more threatening as the kind of, you know, the half hour on, changed the kind of forward line, you know, looked kind of more threatening with Clarkie and Moult involved, I felt, than Craig Moore and Wes Fletcher. But these games, you don't quite know, you know, fully what he's kind of building towards. You know, for example, you had Chalmers, who we were kind of led to believe he was a left back, kind of left sided central defender, had a wee stint in midfield. You know, for the first time this kind of pre season, there's, you know, guys like that, you know, that are getting, you know, opportunities kind of here and there. You know, Ferguson again, he came on right back. We've not seen too much of this close season. Cadden as well, his first opportunity, and it was obviously Marv's first 45. So there's a lot of tinkering going on, a lot of just getting people, you know, building up their sharpness and giving them game time with a view to that opening league game. But it'll become, I would imagine, the closer we get to the start of the season proper, you're going to get to the point, perhaps maybe in the Preston game on Friday evening, where you would anticipate as close to what we can play as our starting 11, and giving them a full 90 or as close to that as we can in readiness for Inverness. But you know, it was encouraging as the second half wore on. Good to get the win, obviously, and it kind of sets us up for the next couple of pre-season games.
Jay, it was a slight concern of mine that three pre-season games down, we had only scored one goal. two goals yesterday obviously boosts the tally slightly. The pre-season, I know, isn't a massive indicator of how the season's going to go. I think someone pointed out the other day we lost 4-0 to Ayr United in a pre-season friendly and then went on and finished second in the league. But I think in terms of the new strikers, particularly scoring goals in these games, it'd be a huge boost going into the season, particularly given we started last season so poorly.
I suppose for, you know, specific players it might be. You know, you'll have certain players who will just see a pre-season friendly as, you know, essentially what it is, a fitness exercise, a chance for the manager to give players certain chances, maybe to try out tactics, stuff like that. But yeah, I'm sure there might be the odd player who would like to get a goal under his belt in pre-season to, you know, carry or get some confidence going or to get a bit of momentum underway. But, you know, I must be one of the most disinterested people when it comes to pre-season friendlies. For me, they should all either be free or just played behind closed doors, because all they are, you know, glorified training sessions. I don't think you can really read a great deal into how many goals have been scored, you know, how many we've conceded. You just need to look at the lineups we've put out. It's, you know, a mix and match at times. You know, Craig Moore's featured quite a lot, probably a lot more than you would expect if we're, you know, we've brought in Fletcher, Moult, Clarkson, we're talking about bringing in McDonald. So you would perhaps think that Moore is going to be out of the picture, and yet he's been involved quite heavily. So, you know, I don't think there's anything you can really read into goals. If we went the whole pre-season without scoring a goal, I still wouldn't be that worried, because, you know, it's pre-season. It's not a big deal. It's about fitness. It's about being able to get into the first game of the season, being able to last the pace, being able to be organised, being able to know where you're going to be and to know the players around you. When it comes to, you know, momentum or form or goal scoring, I don't really see it as that big a concern.
I would agree with that as well. Sorry for jumping in. I mean, I think if you consider, you know, Michael Higdon, was it 5-6 games in his first team kind of career after we started far less pre-season before he scored. So it's no, you know, you're bringing somebody new in, particularly as guys that are coming from different leagues, you know, like Fletcher and Moult, that, you know, it's no, if they don't immediately, you know, find their feet, you know, you have to bear in mind that there's a step up there, and if you don't have to score immediately, it's no, you know, you're not going to write them off, and you would hope that people won't write them off there and then. That's just something to consider for, you know, the strikers going forward, the early part, that, you know, it may be that we're going to take a, you know, a wee while for them to adapt and kind of, you know, find their feet. Particularly, you would expect with, you know, the kind of delivery that we have in either wing coming forward, that sooner or later, if they have the ability, then they'll be able to make use of it. But, you know, don't put a huge amount of pressure on them at the start of the season if it doesn't click, you know, immediately.
Yeah, I suppose the same can be said for Chris Porter as well. He needed one to come off his bum to kind of get him going, but then he really looked back after he got that first goal. I just would prefer to see it come sooner rather than later, and just go into that game at Inverness with the strikers believing that they will score. We could get them at a vulnerable stage as well if they fail to qualify from their European qualifier, which looks pretty likely at this stage, it must be said. Maybe given that that's their first adventure in Europe and it's come to an end so quickly, they'll be there for the taking. I'd just like to see us start and kind of set our stall out for the season in the early part, rather than making us feel that we're going to have to chase our tails for the duration like last season. That was really my only point there.
I agree that pre-season essentially means nothing. Like yourselves, other than Andy P, I've not bothered with pre-season because it bores me to tears. I think we'd have to play Real Madrid's first team to get me to go along and pay into a friendly, to be honest with you. But if we keep making the same mistakes, like I read the Bradford game, the mistakes were similar to our poor parts of last season, it's maybe a bit of concern then. But I do agree that pre-season means nothing, but it'd be interesting to see if we are still making the same mistakes come 3 or 4 games into the season.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why you have pre-season. You know, you want to identify mistakes, you want to identify, you know, players maybe not communicating or not knowing exactly where they fit into the system. That's what pre-season, you know, if we're making mistakes at pre-season and getting beat every game, then as long as we're working on it behind the scenes and working on it in training, then, you know, I'm perfectly happy. I mean, again, I mean, nobody, I don't think, I mean, Sparrow, you were sort of saying about, you know, you don't want to be chasing our tails and things like that. You know, come the start of the season, if we're doing a podcast like 3 or 4 games in and we've still not scored, then yeah, I'll completely agree. But, you know, I think that, you know, to go the whole pre-season and if we didn't score, then I would still be confident going into the first game of the season that you're going to stick a few away, because it's just a completely different scenario, completely different, you know, tactics, completely different personnel involved from the start, completely different mindset. I just don't think that there's really much to be read into it.
Buster, you touched on it a wee bit earlier there, paying into pre-season friendlies. That's been a bone of contention for quite a few people, the prices to get into these friendlies. I think it was £10 to get into Grangemouth for the Bradford game on Tuesday, £12 for an adult ticket for the Livingston game yesterday. It doesn't really make it that appealing. I was very surprised to see 300 or 400 Motherwell fans had travelled to Livingston yesterday, given the prices. You would think that the clubs would come together with an idea to make these games a bit more attractive for the punters.
I kind of tend to agree there, but I think, first of all, we have to ask, was it within our control, considering, you know, we weren't at Fir Park. Essentially, I take it that we were renting these places, Grangemouth and Almondvale, or whatever it's called now. So, I don't know if it's been, you know, out with our control. In regards to actual prices in general, prices are ridiculous anyway. I read on Pie and Borrow the other day, there's a guy who stays in Italy. He's got a season ticket for Kiev or Verona, and it cost them €75, I think he says. So, you know, prices are ridiculous, but, I mean, how much do you want to be charged for these friendlies anyway? Fiver, maybe?
I can understand the point, and I know it is really the going rate for pre-season games over the years, but it just, I think more and more people just vote their feet. Last season, I was ready to go to the Fulham game, but then just opted to stay in the pub, but it's, I think, Jay, you were back by half-time anyway.
That sounds about right. But no, I think you're right. I mean, in terms of, like Buster saying about how much would you charge, as I said earlier, if possible, and I know there's stewarding costs and all that kind of thing, but if possible, I'd make them as cheap as possible, possibly free, or just play them behind closed doors. I mean, you've got to remember that the pre-season friendlies, when there's not any competitive element, you know, there isn't that attraction to go, but there will be an attraction to certain people. And I'm not saying it's a big seller, but you might have, you know, a local, like local parents with some young kids who they're not really into football. They're maybe a bit put off about bringing kids along to a competitive game where there might be a bit of animosity. And if there's a friendly that's, you know, it's during the summer holidays, there's a friendly that will cost a couple of quid, then they might take their kid along, and then who knows, that might then lead to them getting more into going on a regular basis. Instead, you know, 12 quid, I mean, 10 quid, I mean, we looked at going to the game at Grangemouth on the Tuesday, me and you, Sparra, and, you know, soon, 10 quid to go into Grangemouth, which is, you know, a small kind of sports centre stadium. I mean, it's not unlike the John Wright Sports Centre in East Kilbride from the photos I saw. They charge £1.10 to get in as a, or £1.50 to get in as a spectator when there's things happening. So even if we are paying to rent out the place, which according to the prices on the website costs about 500 quid to rent out the arena, you know, what stewarding costs are they going to be for a pre-season friendly? To charge 12 quid is just, you know, for a 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon, it just doesn't make any sense. And I completely understand that there might be added costs, but I just don't, I can't understand what those would be and what justification there is for charging a tenner. Sorry, it was a tenner for that game and 12 quid for the game at Livy. But 10 quid, you know, we went to both legs of the playoffs for that. And yet they're wanting 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon for a meaningless friendly against Bradford. £10 to sit in Grangemouth. It's just, it just doesn't really make any sense. And I think that's something that can be a one of contention as well. It's not just that football's too expensive, which it clearly is, but there's no consistency at all. It's just, you know, it makes absolutely no sense. If they said, okay, we're going to be playing Preston on a Friday night, Almondvale. It's a Friday night, so people can get there. It's Preston. You know, Chris Humphrey's going to be there, so there's a few added extras, so we're going to charge you £12 for that. But we're also going to play, you know, Livy or Sunday. We're going to play something on a Tuesday afternoon, which is not really, you know, that particularly interesting, so we'll charge you a fiver for that. There doesn't seem to be any scope for them to actually price it based on the what you're going to see. It's just a sort of blanket nonsense double digit figure for meaningless friendlies. And again, that's why we don't go. I mean, it's just, there's no attraction to go whatsoever.
I suppose if Marlowe are essentially paying Livingston and paying Grangemouth Sports Centre as well to rent out their ground, there would be nothing to stop them saying, well, we're going to have three friendlies on home soil. It'll be £15 for a package of three. And then suddenly you've actually got people that maybe only went to one game going to all three and putting a few quid extra in the coffers. Just package it in some way that the fans don't feel that they've been mugged a wee bit when at a time where you're renewing season tickets and everything else. I think that curiosity perhaps gets the better of people at sometimes. Andy would possibly know better given that he went along yesterday. It was just something that, I must confess, never crossed my mind to travel to Livingston to watch a pre-season game.
Well, what I would say just on that is the fact that, firstly, I mean, let's not get carried away. It's pre-season friendlies. They're meaningless games. So I'm sure the club could say, well, it's not really a big deal. You know, yes, if you're paying season tickets, you're joining the Welsh Society, you're doing whatever. Well, if you don't want to go to a pre-season friendly, don't go. You know, it's not a big deal. But on the flip side, if we're genuinely saying that the reason we're being charged £10 to get into Grangemouth Sports Centre or £12 to get into Livy is because we're renting these places and therefore the club needs to meet up costs, then surely, logically then, if we play, you know, next time we play a home friendly at Firth Park, it should be £2 because we won't need to pay any costs because it's our stadium. Of course, you might need, you know, stewards and that kind of thing and the staff on the day. But if we're saying that, you know, it's going to be, you know, these prices are a bit out of order, but it's because we're renting out places, then surely when it's at Firth Park, they'll be cheapest chips, which it probably won't be.
Does the opposition come into play, though? Depends on who invites who for the friendly. You know, for example, I know that you've got occasions, particularly testimonials, where you have to pay the expenses of the opposition for coming up. Is that something that comes into play with friendlies? If you initiate the, you know, the question, then perhaps there are costs. You know, if you invite Bradford to play us in a friendly, they may be already in Scotland on a training tour anyway, but there's maybe some element of expenses have to come into play. That's possibly, I'm just chucking that out. I don't know whether that's the case or not, but you know, is that a possibility where some of the cash would go towards?
The Stevie Hamill's testimonial, I can remember, there was talk in the preparation for Everton coming for that game. Everton command insurance and fees and everything else, and it's very costly to book a home friendly against what you would regard as a higher class of opposition. I can remember even when Barcelona were touring Scotland, I think they did it 1 or 2 years, didn't they? And Hearts played them at Murrayfield. Hearts played them at Murrayfield, and I think that was, as much as they would have loved to play them at their own ground, they had to cover the costs of Barcelona coming. I don't think Hearts would have made a penny from these games because you've got your Messi's and all that coming over to play against Robbie Nielsen, so they had to protect him in some sort of way.
Well, it costs a lot for me to date in Football Manager, so I can only imagine it's definitely Hunters in real life.
maybe slightly more than Hunters, but we've talked about six new signings have come in. Is there, if we were only to get one more, Andy, what position would you like that player to play in?
It would have to be the goalkeeper, I would say. That's the kind of the most pressing need at the moment. Whilst we were keen on perhaps adding another midfielder in there, we do have Jack Leach, who was basically not involved for you know, almost 90% of last season. So he's a kind of a returning, you know, midfielder there. We've also got Chris Cadden, who was at Albion Rovers and did particularly well by all accounts. So if not perhaps of a immediate start and first team level, we do have some numbers there. Whereas goalkeeper wise, has been said on a few occasions, for the manager, you've got one senior goalkeeper there. So that would be the most pressing need. Even if it's not someone you would expect, it's someone that's going to be coming in and taking over the number one jersey immediately. But even if it was back up for Dwardzik, we are going to need someone. You know, with only the others at Brett Long as the kind of backup keeper, the reserve keeper at the moment. That's the position they most pressing need. So we would have to see a goalkeeper.
What about for you, Jay? What would be your key position to strengthen?
I'm inclined to agree with Andy. I don't think there's a great amount between, you know, a midfielder that can basically, you know, obviously nowadays if you can get somebody in who can play, you know, across the midfield, then that's great. But I think somebody who can play central midfield and a goalkeeper are undoubtedly the two priority positions. And I think I'm inclined to agree with Andy. I think that, yes, midfield, you're looking at your first choice to sit, like your two midfielders are going to be Pirro and Lasley, but, you know, they're both, you know, they're not the youngest players, they're both getting on. Pirro had a few injury concerns just in the short spell he had at the club, so I think that there is a priority there to get someone in at central midfield. But as Andy said, you've got players, you know, Jack Leach, I thought was looking really, really good before he got injured when he was playing on a semi-regular basis. I think, you know, you've got Cadden and guys like that, so you've got a bit of cover in there. Whereas I think goalkeeper, not only is there the risk that if something happens to Twardzig, you don't really, you know, you've got an uncertain, untested young goalkeeper to get in Brett Long. You've also got the issue of the fact that I'm sure Busta will agree with. As much as I like Dan, I don't think he's a bad goalkeeper. I think, you know, you can be making improvements there. You can be bringing somebody in who can not just be a backup to Twardzig, but can actually either challenge or take the number one jersey. So I'd agree. I think the priority is a goalkeeper, very, very closely followed by a central midfielder.
But I'm pretty sure what your answer is going to be to this question. but it would be unfair not to ask you as well.
Well, I agree with the other guys. I think it's imperative we got a number one in, not even just a goalkeeper to challenge, a number one. As I've said before, I would love Dan to be, you know, the best goalie in the league. I just don't think he is, unfortunately. I don't think he's anywhere near it, but, you know, I think that's a priority, basically, a goalkeeper. You know, you never know, even if it is just a challenge, Dan might step up his game, you know, prove me wrong. I'd be delighted with that, to be fair. But I think we know that we're definitely looking for a goalkeeper and a midfielder. Just by asking folk a few questions, you know, we got the answer that we're looking for a goalkeeper and a midfielder. So I think it'd be important to get the goalkeeper in first. As you say, we've got Pearson and Lasley, you know, even Leach, Cadden, you know, all these other youngsters that I mentioned as well, they're in there just now. But we've only got one sort of senior goalkeeper. So it'd be good to bring a goalkeeper in. I know there was talk on the chat boards of Craig Sampson. So I don't know what Andy thinks of that. Again, as it's been said, a couple of years ago, I think I really would have had a look at him, taking him on. I've not seen much of him since, so I don't even know what he's like anymore.
I saw him a fair bit at St Mirren, and I wasn't ever that convinced by him, I must say, but I thought particularly last season in the final game that we played Kilmarnock at Fir Park, I thought he was poor for a few of the goals, didn't inspire very much confidence, but I believe he was a player that Stuart McCall had a look at as well.
Well, that's the thing for me. I had an opportunity to come to us previously, and there are players out there that, you know, if they knock you back once, you'd be inclined, if they're of a sufficient quality, that you would, you know, kind of give them the leeway for that. But would you say Samson's sufficient quality? Say if you turned us down once, would we go back chasing again? I don't think so.
I suppose it depends where the rumour comes to as well. I mean, is there any truth to it, or is it purely because McCall was interested in him? once upon a time. You know, that's kind of what happens with these kind of things. You look at the Freddie Dindaloo story that seemed to pop up every summer because, you know, there might have been truth in it 7 years ago. So, I mean, I'm not sure how much truth there is to that. I would like to think we were, even just the fact, you know, the new scouting system, Barraclough's contacts down south and a new goalkeeping coach, I would like to think that we were spreading our net a little wider than St Mirren.
Well, hopefully that's the last time that Freddie Dindal is mentioned this season in the podcast.
Until he makes a summer special next summer.
Or he's spotted in the club shop again.
I suppose that's it. The new goalkeeping coach comes in with a fair bit of pedigree and background, particularly in the English game. It would be quite surprising if we then sign a goalkeeper that played with Kilmarnock last season.
Yeah, of course it was at Kilmarnock, not St Mirren. But yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think, can I just say, I mean, again, I don't know what the general consensus is, but I'm quite pleased that the, you know, one of our kind of outgoings and signings during the summer has been Marshall leaving and the new goalkeeping coach whose name I can't remember coming in.
Jim Holman.
You know, I don't, you know, obviously we don't know the ins and outs of what goes on at the club, but as fans, you obviously have to go in what you're told and the kind of, you know, what you perceive to be going on. And I think, you know, Marshall being in charge of goalkeeper recruitment, you know, bringing in Nielsen, you know, apparently because he was going to be the next big thing and making sure they get a big wage. And I don't think we've seen any development of our goalkeepers. I think that, you know, Hollis and Nielsen were never great to start with. I think Long, although he had a great game at Ibrox, I think he kind of, I think you would say he declined, if anything, at Fir Park. I think Twardzik had a great loan spell, and yet when he signed, he just suddenly declined. So I'm hoping that we actually see some noticeable differences now when you're goalkeeping coach, now that Marshall's away. I'd like to think that, yeah, he's got a great pedigree, a great CV, hopefully contacts, hopefully he already has a good idea of some young goalkeepers down south. So I'd actually be looking for guys like Twardzik and Brett Long to actually improve now that we've hopefully got someone who can push on and do a better job than what we've had previously.
That takes us on nicely to another change off the park with Jonathan Johansson departing the club and Stephen Craigan coming in as our new under-20s coach. I think the general consensus was everyone was absolutely delighted with the return of Craigs to the setup at Fir Park, a very, very popular figure. Spent a great number of years with the club. And it's been a bit of a frustration of mine that so few players have broken through from the 20s side, despite them seemingly recording quite steady results. I think with the exception of Dom Thomas last season, he was kind of the sole player that had broken through. Lee Irwin had many years in that team and only kind of came to the fold last season as well. Hopefully, a kind of fresh face in amongst the setup will help develop some young talent, because we're certainly going to need it to bolster what is a pretty small squad.
Yeah, you hope so. I mean, that's part of the strategy, isn't it? That we take as much of our own talent, feed it through into the first team, and hopefully sell it on at a hefty amount. So you would expect that, you know, there's going to be a lot of focus in that, or a lot more focus in terms of trying to bring players through. And Barraclough has already stated, perhaps not with the, you know, some of the younger ones specifically in mind, more so your Thomases and Caddens of the kind of squad at the moment, but that he's specifically or purposely going to leave slots in the pool to give these guys a chance to progress and emerge. And that's obviously going to continue down through the season. So there is an increasing importance and focus on getting players coming through. For me, youth development is always a difficult one, because the nature of the beast is that you've got players developing at different rates, at different ages. And we made changes in the past. You know, we kind of went down to the academy structure as well that Scott Leach is in kind of command of. And I can't remember how many seasons ago that is. But the thing with youth is it's going to take several years, or potentially several years, for any changes that you do at that level to make its impact in the first team. So bringing in Stephen Craigan might not necessarily develop any kind of great successes for the first team. You know, maybe it's 2 or 3 years down the line until the changes that have been made further back have their necessary impact. So it's a difficult one, but you know, there's no going to be for the fact that you know it's an avenue that has been made clear that they're going to have to get around, and it's going to be a you know or it's viewed as a revenue stream for the club going forward. So hopefully we will see a kind of continuation of you know, the better results. It seemed to be the last couple of seasons under Johansson that we would have a wee bit of an iffy start and then they would come together as the season progressed. And, you know, you're kind of wondering why when they were doing well, why some of them appeared to be being released. But as I say, you know, that's the avenue we're going down. So hopefully Craigs can help develop these players and feed them through into the first team. It was obviously great to see him come back with his long-standing connections with the club. But obviously, the key element there is not what he's done as a player, it's what he can bring to the club as a coach. And he seemed to be kind of well-regarded by what he'd done in terms of Northern Ireland. And there's a connection there with Stephen Robinson too. So it looks encouraging. You know, it's good to have a club legend back in. And all the better that he seems to have the attributes required to help develop the players. So we just wait and see what he can do in the seasons ahead.
Buff, how big do you think that is, the connection with Robinson? You've now got a backroom team that is guys like Kenny Black, Gordon Marshall, that were there from the previous regime, so to speak. Will that make things a bit more solid and everyone on the same wavelength?
I think so. I think we've basically now seen a complete clear out, if you want, of the Stuart McCall team. I don't know who's still really there. You know, the sort of forefront people. They've definitely at least been cleared out anyway, or you know, chose to leave as it's been put. So Robinson, Craigan, probably know each other through the Northern Ireland setup. I'm led to believe Craigan was part of one of the unders teams as well or something last year. I didn't know anything about that, but I read that when he was appointed somewhere. So you know, it's obviously great to see Stevie Craigan come back. He's I think everybody sort of treats him as a hero, but you know, to have him back at the club, and it's one of those guys who you wouldn't mind seeing, you know, in 5-6 years, if he ended up the manager coming through the ranks there, he ended up the manager of the club. As long as he was doing a good job, I don't think anybody would mind. So it'll be interesting to see how this new team, you know, Barraclough's team, if you want, all come together and see how it starts. You know, see if we actually do start to bring any sort of players through. You know, as Andy says there, though, it's one of those things that could take years. Other than going back to like Clarkson, Paul Quinn, things like that, guys who are maybe pushing 30 now, I don't think there's MD really, you know, in our team or cutting about the league, about 25 or something who's come through our youth team, is there?
Depends how you want to view it. There's always the element whereby we kind of did a bit. You know, you could take Sean Hutchison, who you could say was a product of our kind of youth setup because he's first senior club. But you'll have other people say that he'd done all his development in the northeast of England, and we were fortunate enough, or however he was picked up, he came to the club, but he wasn't one of our own. It kind of depends how you perceive that, whether you see him as a motherable product or someone that we've brought to the club. I mean, how far do you need to go back to say someone's like a motherable youth signing kind of thing? So it depends how you kind of perceive that one.
And I do say that that'll be a kind of change in the approach with the academy setup being in place for a few years now, that the guys will be taken on from school level, and they'll be nurtured that far apart rather than guys like Gordon Young kind of casting his net far and wide to try and find young players that he can bring into the youth setup and like the likes of Hutchison and bring them on. I think the boy Page would have been the same. He got him from down south and saw a bit in him. I suppose again, it's the same as with Scottish talent. I guess some of them will work and some of them won't fulfil the potential or the potential that whatever scout sees in them. So it's an interesting one. I think that we're yet to see the fruits of the academy, though, and that's not concerning at this early stage. But in the next couple of years, I think particularly those in charge, Mr. Hutchison especially, will be looking at that and saying, we've had this in place for 5 years now. Why haven't the club made any money from it? Which I suppose is the ultimate end game.
Well, I think one of the things I was just going to say there, I think that it's easy to look at Jonathan Johansson and say, well, where are the players coming from? And yes, it's going to be a long-term thing and you want to be bringing a revenue stream, but you also need a manager in charge who's going to gamble and is going to give the players a chance. And I don't think McCall, for everything that he did for us, I don't think he was the greatest in that respect. Yes, you know, guys like Jack Leach kind of forced their way into the team when injuries were occurring. Carswell had a good season, but you know, your guys like Dom Thomas, who, you know, you look at the first half of this, the first half of last season, I mean, Dom Thomas's name was mentioned on a weekly basis about how he should be getting in the team. You know, he was tearing up the under-20s, and yet there seemed to be, and I still don't know if there was any truth in it, there was the rumour that we were going to have to pay Celtic a big development fee if he played 5 games or something like that. And the more I think about it, the more I wonder if that was just, you know, a rumour because nobody could quite believe that he wasn't getting in the team. The same with Lee Irwin. I know he had injuries, but he was used quite sparingly. And I think that it was only when Barraclough has come in, even with guys like Ross McLean, who seems to have, you know, been featuring a lot in pre-season. Luke Watt looks as though he's getting a lot of game time, as though he's going to be used. As I said earlier, Craig Moore looks as though he's going to be a pick, at least for the, you know, at least coming off the bench, because he's involved in quite a lot of pre-season friendly. So I think you also need a manager who is prepared to trust the young players. I mean, you can have Stevie Craigan could be the greatest youth coach that's ever existed and he could be producing fantastic youth players, but if you've not got a manager who's prepared to trust them and prepared to put them in the team, then you're not going to go anywhere.
Aye, without wanting to bash McCall further, the Albion Rovers Cup game, and that's the best example of that, where there was players with injuries and everything else. He didn't even bother filling the bench.
Well, aye, exactly.
So,
I mean,
so you could have actually given young players the opportunity, even if they weren't going to get on, to sample not a big match experience, but a big muddled crowd there and everything else. It just a wee taste of it. And he chose not to do that. That was really, if it had happened last season, he would have been sacked before he jumped. But that was a real flaw in his managerial tenure at Fir Park for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, every manager's obviously different. Some managers will see it. You know, I said it like a few times last season that I felt that McCall was more of a short term kind of manager, in that, you know, for him it was a case of rebuild the side, get results, you know, do as well as we can, and then, you know, rebuild again. And it was almost, you know, that kind of idea. So for McCall, it was almost, when players leave, you replace them. So, you know, if Tom Hatley leaves, you don't look at the young players and thought, maybe Luke Watt could come in, maybe, but we'll bring in Craig Reid or you know, that kind of idea. So
essentially plug gaps.
Well, aye, so McCall was a case of continually, you know, a rotation, almost like a conveyor belt. You know, a player, first team player leaves, so you need to bring another first team player in. And as I said a couple of times last season, although at times Barraclough, things weren't looking good. I mean, I always got the impression for Barraclough is that he's like a long-term sort of project manager, where he'll seek to put everything in place. I think you're seeing that with the management team. You know, it's always imperative to him that he wants to have his management team. You know, the scouting system, I know, is you know, I think it's been in the planning stages for a while. But, you know, I think this all adds up to, you know, a long-term vision for the club, a project, if you like. And I think that's going to involve bringing young players through, nurturing them and bringing them into the team. And I don't know whether it's bashing McCall, but I just don't think that it was, you know, something that was really part of in his mindset. I just think, you know, Higdon leaves, we need to replace him with Sutton. You know, that kind of idea. First team player out, need another first team in, rather than looking to bring players through. So I think you'll start to see young players getting their chance and flourishing now. Partly because, you know, hopefully we're producing them, but I think also because you have a manager who will give them a chance.
There's the element as well where we were always kind of competing under McCall without, you know, kind of defending them. We had targets that we were working towards, there were occasions certainly where he could have brought youngsters on. You know, there's a famous one that Steelboy off Steelman Online refers to as the last game of the season at St John's, when I think he brought on Omar Bailey, for example. There are quite a few examples similar to that, but for the most part, we were chasing something, or we were working towards something, whereas it's going to be slightly different, you would imagine, under Barraclough. Now, he's going to have the benefit of hopefully us being kind of more, if you can call it a benefit, he's going to have like the starting afresh with the season, where we're hopefully not going to be with any relegation issues. We wouldn't expect this season, perhaps, that we're going to be back up at the kind of top end of the table as we were under McCall. So he's going to have that bit more breathing space to bring people in. There's also a kind of different set-up mentality in the boardroom as well, whereas it's not, I mean, we heard the kind of the financial issues, not that that perhaps is any bearing in terms of youth development, but it was very much, we got the impression the club were working week to week, month to month, and that seemed to be the case exactly as you're saying, you know, with the kind of way McCall looked at it, a more short-term outlook, whereas everything now is much more kind of long-term. There's a bit of breathing space for, you know, for Barraclough to introduce these guys, and depending on how things go in the league, he's hopefully going to have that more space to bring them on as well in the team going forward, and hopefully we'll, you know, maybe a wee bit of short-term pain for longer-term benefit, both for the team and both for the club financially as well.
I think the fact that there's nobody come through the youth system who is maybe about 23 or 24 brings us on to the most exciting part of the pre-season. The fact that we've been signing players, there's three or four of them, you know, 23, 24, Chalmers, Kennedy, Moat and Fletcher, you know, they're all about the same age, roughly early 20s. So I think that's, you know, that's part of it. We're obviously bringing them in, some of them we even paid a wee fee for, and we're looking obviously to develop their game and sell them on as well.
Guys, we'll move towards wrapping up, but I suppose it would be wrong if we didn't promote the fact that we've moved on to our own website, thanks to the fantastic work of Davey Young. So we're basically a plea to everyone that's previously subscribed to the podcast. We'll be putting out various messages wherever we possibly can to resubscribe, so you don't miss out in any future episodes. We've got one lined up in the coming weeks with Alan Burrows, hopefully before the season starts. Jay, the move to the website, I suppose it's just it's a new home for all the stuff that we do, and hopefully it works out pretty well.
Yeah, I think it's good to have things a bit more organised. You know, you've got a Facebook account, a Twitter account, and a thread on Steelman Online, and it's all a bit haphazard. So yeah, it's good to have things kind of in one place so that people know exactly where they're going if they want to get an episode of the podcast or one of the career 1-11s.
Buster, I know I've already kind of praised his work, but Davey's the kind of unseen fourth member, isn't he? He does a fantastic amount of work for us, and perhaps doesn't always get the praise that he deserves because he wasn't at the Player of the Year, or he hasn't in some of the photos. He's not
exactly
a cartoon either.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think we've all said it, to be fair, amongst ourselves at least, maybe not publicly, but David does some amount of work for us. He's basically treated like a slave.
That's not strictly true.
Well, when you're sending him a message at 11:30 at night saying, David, do you fancy doing this? And he replies at 12:30 saying, that's it, done. You know, it's a bit dodgy. But as she says, he does some amount of work. As Jay said as well, I think the forays are need to go to the pub one day and not let him put his hand in his pocket at least. So, you know, like yourselves, we'd just like to thank him for all the work he's put in.
It's looking good. As an outsider from a, you know, kind of guest perspective, I had a wee look at it when it was launched, and it's certainly looking good. It's pretty good, nice and clean, easy to navigate round about, and, you know, it's good there for anybody that's known the kind of pleasure of listening to the other podcast before. Maybe didn't realise that they had the kind of the catalogue of them on the thread in Steelman Online. I'm sure it'll be really beneficial for everybody just to be able to go on and, you know, look at the podcast right in the way back from day one, kind of hear how it's progressed over time. Well, definitely be beneficial for a lot of Well fans, I'm sure.
Andy, thanks to yourself as well, mate. If it was Soccer AM, you would get a hat-trick ball. I believe this is the third appearance. Whereas you don't get anything, so bad luck, mate. But thanks as always, especially given that you've taken the time to go to one of the pre-season friendlies. We were going into this slightly blind today, so
your presence was
very helpful.
No bother.
You've been listening to the first MFC podcast of the new season. We'll be back next week. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Give me that composure. Give me that self-respect, that confidence, that closure. If we were drunk in love, then I'd fail the course to get sober. I make you see the taste of this bottle as the ace melts in my glass. And I tell myself it's my last. But I wanna be like me, get drunk like me. Walk the lane, I ride a push to peace. And when I get like me, turn up like me. I lose my mind until I find the taste. And when I'm in that zone, I won't go home. Jack D telling me, roll my phone. Till I double the next round and I can't see. Self-destruct from like 2 to 3. Get it when I get through, get it when I feel that. I can't leave till it's all done. Breathe in a bottle, can't get my mind right. And I'm fighting with the wrong one. Get it when I get through, get it when I feel that. I'm breaking out of my skin. 12-step program, won't say no man. Let me drink to